Welcome to another episode of South Asia Chat, the weekly podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Ramita Iyer, research analyst at ISAS and the host for today's episode. Bhutan has graduated from the United Nations list of least developed countries, or LDCs, in December 2023, making it only the seventh country in the world to be able to do so. For some context on the subject, the LDC category was formally established by the UN in 1971, and to achieve graduation, a country needs to meet predefined criteria on income, human assets, and economic and environment vulnerability. In this episode, we will be discussing various aspects related to Bhutan's developmental journey and the challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. I am pleased to have with me Dr. Dilbahadur Rahut, Vice Chair of Research and Senior Research Fellow at the Asian Development Bank Institute. Dr. Rahut, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Namita. It's my pleasure to be here with you.
So Bhutan's developmental journey has been quite unique and remarkable. Since the 1980s, Bhutan has shown significant progress with an average annual real GDP growth rate of about 7.5%. And it has been able to achieve great strides economically, despite it not being an industrial manufacturing economy. So could you throw some light on the economic drivers of growth that has made Bhutan's LDC graduation possible?
Thank you, Ramita. I think for Bhutan and for Bhutanese, I think it's a great milestone that we have achieved. Not only pride for Bhutan, but also for other neighboring countries and other global communities who have worked very extensively with us. We have worked very closely with us. First and foremost, I think, ever since Bhutan came out our policy of self-isolation in the 1960s, India has been a great partner in its development process. And most of the early five-year plan was supported by government of India. And it has been very vital stimulus for us. But moving forward, Bhutan government has actually partnered with government of India to initiate hydropower projects, which has actually driven the growth of countries in the sense that we started with Chuka hydropower projects, and then we moved on to Tala hydropower projects, and then several other projects that's in pipeline. So that has been the main driver. Beside that, we also have a very good tourism policy, high value, low volume, which has actually contributed in formations of the foreign exchange currency income. Beside tourism, Bhutan has very niche sectors like mining sectors, and we also have what you call the good agriculture base. Although we are not like exporting because we are very small, we are not exporting as much as we should. Like other countries, but we have very high quality products that we have been able to export to India, Bangladesh, and that has also helped transform the rural economy. And as I earlier said, that electricity is very, very crucial for us. But what government has done is that government has moved really beyond just producing and selling. It has gone to the extent of providing subsidy to the rural households where significant numbers of households in rural areas gets full subsidies for the use of electricity, and it has really helped in transforming Bhutanese households, their income and their livelihood patterns significantly. So these are the economic drivers, but later I'll come to other social drivers.
Moving on to another aspect of the environment, we see that Bhutan is one of the only three carbon negative countries worldwide, which means that it absorbs more greenhouse gases than it produces. Its commitment to the environment is also visible through the increased importance that is given to ecological and environment sustenance in its policies. Could you elaborate on this approach followed by the country?
Yes, Bhutan has been very careful with managing its environment in the sense that We have very good environmental policies, like wetland management policies. We have policies of forest, good forest policies. And even the constitutions of Bhutan states that we have to maintain at least 60% of forest coverage. Today, we have over 70%. So that has been a very a policy of choice that the government has made. And also, as I said to you earlier, the policy of providing free electricity to rural households also has significantly contributed in reducing, you know, deforestation, the use of fuel wood for cooking. So people have really switched from traditional biomass to electric cooking stoves. I can still remember when I looked at the data from 2005, only about 50-60% of the people had were using like improved stoves, electric stoves. But today, almost every household uses electric stoves. Every household uses a water boiler, rice cooker to cook rice, which means that the pressure on forestry resources is very, very less. So it's a very desired and very purposively made policy of maintaining natural resources that has actually helped us to maintain our resources, our biodiversity. And government has promised to maintain such policies for times to come.
Digital technology innovation and digital connectivity also plays an important role in ensuring inclusive and sustainable development. And this was actually one of the things highlighted in a recent ADB Institute publication that you've co-edited, which is titled Digital Transformation for Inclusive and Sustainable Development in Asia. In looking at the Bhutanese context then, what has been the role of digital technology in Bhutan's socio-economic development journey? And from the from a perspective of governance or good governance, as you'd call it, could you share your views on some of the sectors in which this has worked well?
Thank you, Ramita. We are in an age where we cannot live with without digital technology. Digital technology has been part and parcel of everyone's life, and it has transformed several sectors and way of doing business. In Bhutanese context, just to give you an example, about 2 decades back, most of the bankings were standalone banking systems where we used to do transactions through very traditional modes of payment systems, traditional modes of transferring money. But with the advent of digital technology, you can see how banking sector has transformed. There are ATM machines everywhere. People can withdraw. And then came the age of POS machines. People were able to use cards in Bhutan very easily. Cross-border transaction was very, very easy for Bhutanese. Then we moved into the age of mobile banking, where almost every Bhutanese have a mobile phone and are able to transact, do most of the transactions through mobile bank, which has really helped us to move into a cashless society. Like having traveled into several countries, I feel that Bhutan is really moving into what you call the cashless society. The entire payment systems, entire land taxation systems, or entire even the other taxation systems has really moved into mobile banking. And if you look at significant progress that Bhutan has made, is that most of the government to people services are moving onto digital forms, digital platforms where people are able to make applications for passport, people are able to obtain police clearance, people are able to make travel permits. Most of the things that we used to actually visit, we could do it with mobile now. So you see, we have significantly reduced footsteps in the banking sectors, footsteps in the government's offices. So which means that it's faster. It's easier. You can do it from anywhere, not only anywhere in Bhutan, but you can do anywhere from anywhere in the world. So that's a level of, I think, transformations that digital technology has brought into Bhutan. I think this is possible because we are small. And secondly, we have leaders who are very committed and who want to bring about changes that affects the life of people.
Graduation from the list of LDCs would also imply that Bhutan will lose access to certain specific privileges like trade and foreign aid concessions. So while, and so far we have discussed Bhutan's development journey, which has been quite commendable and has contributed to its graduation, I think it would be apt to end our discussion with hearing your thoughts on what lies for Bhutan going ahead. What do you think should be the strategy that the country should adopt to ensure that there is a smooth transition?
Yes. Thank you, Ramita. But before I actually come to that point, I'd like to share one few points that would be, I think, meaningful here for our transformations or for graduations from LDC to from LDC. So one of the thing that I've always felt is that it's a transition is not an easy graduation is not an easy. But I think Bhutan has been very blessed with great leadership who have played a very critical role, who have really sacrificed everything for the prosperity and peace within the countries, and our monarch has really played a very significant role, has been very gracious enough to take care of the needs of the people, to help in transforming, and has really played a very, very critical role in this process, and I think that's the critical, the leadership, and Bhutan has been blessed with great leadership. That's one thing that I'd like to put. Second thing that I'd like to put is that governance and institutions. We may get aids, we may get support from external sources, but if the governance and institutions within the countries are not strong enough or are not good, then those resources does not get into productive investment. So Bhutan has actually purposefully designed very, very good institutions, very, very good governance system. So that has actually played a very important role in in moving Bhutan out of the LDC categories. And the other thing is that trust and cooperations within the citizen. I think in Bhutan, the mutual trust between citizen, mutual trust between the government and the people, that's very, very strong. So that has also helped us to be, very peaceful. We are a very peaceful as well as very stable country. So those were the foundations that actually helped us, more than anything else. And also, just to give you some example, Bhutan has invested a lot on health and education. In Bhutan, education is free, health is free. Health and education are one of the fundamental investment that you can make in building human capital, and that actually helps in moving the countries both economically and socially. So these very, very important fundamental that was needed, actually, our government, our great monarch actually provided those fundamentals, platforms. Without this platform, I think we wouldn't have achieved what we have achieved in such a short period of time, despite being landlocked, despite being a country with very limited resources. And we started our journey very, very late. If we are very young in terms of moving into the path of economic prosperity, but we have made a significant progress. So I really would like to to thank governments and the policymakers for making policies which were very, very conducive. And now coming back to the point where which you have highlighted that we have graduated now, the foreign aids that we are going to receive, the concessional loans that we are going to receive is going to come down. And definitely these are going to come down, and it's going to have an impact because it has really been one of the source for us to grow, for us to invest in human capital, in the development process. So definitely it will really hamper our progress. We'll not but then I believe and I sincerely hope many donors will continue to work with us very closely because of the reputation that we have built. And I think small countries, landlocked countries like Bhutan and other like developing countries who may graduate but who are very small and landlocked. They need special support from the international communities, particularly like particularly our, because our resource base is very small. And the role that we are playing in terms of producing global public goods, like the carbon, net zero carbon emissions, and all those things. So taking into account those, I'm sure like many countries will continue to support us. Beside that, we have, I think Bhutan has made very, very productive investment in hydropower sectors, in tourism sectors. We are trying to reform agriculture sectors. We also trying to open other sectors, other business areas that government has initiated, and that will actually help us manage some of the shortfall that we may have because of the changes in the concessional policies towards Bhutan.
Thank you for that. I think I just have a quick last follow-up question on the broader regional context that we are seeing developing in the South Asian subcontinent. Which is that of, more initiatives that are on the sub-regional level. For example, the BBIN, which is Bangladesh, Bhutan, India, and Nepal, which has seen a spur of activities over the past few years. So in the days to come, do you see value for Bhutan from such sub-regional cooperation initiatives?
Thanks, Ramita. This is very, very relevant question, particularly when we are graduating from LDC's group. Bhutan has always been very forthcoming and for regional cooperation. We have very good relation with India. We have very good relation with Bangladesh, Nepal, and other neighboring countries. And I think that will allow us to build more closer economic cooperations. Particularly, if you look at India, India is a big market, over a billion people. So it's there for us. And India has been very friendly, has always been open to the proposal from Bhutan. So definitely that will help us. And Bangladesh also is a big market. We have very good relation with Bangladesh, Nepal. So if we can actually initiate the policy of BBIN, actually move forward, I think Bhutan, Nepal, and Bangladesh, small country, will really benefit. And not only that, but the other, neighboring states will also be able to take advantage of the growth and growth that's happening in the neighboring countries. And if you look at this, the whole India, Northeast India, Bhutan, Nepal, and Bangladesh. So it's also easier for us to link with Southeast Asia. And that's something that we really need to South Asia should really connect with Southeast Asia, integrate ourselves so that we can trade, very closely with Southeast Asia. There are things that we could take from Southeast Asia, but there are also things that we could export to Southeast Asia, which would help from South Asia to Southeast Asia. So this corridor that will kick in if we try to strengthen BBIN network. Will be used. There will be a humongous amount of benefit to the people and to the nation.
Dr. Rao, thanks very much for being on the podcast. You were listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates on our publications, events, and podcasts on social media.